Disclaimer, some of the things stated in this podcast may be triggering to some people. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to today's podcast. I am your host, Riani.
I am your host, Mia.
I am your host, Elena.
And I'm your host, Rocio.
And today we have a special episode prepared just for you guys. Today we will be talking about John Wayne Gacy, also known as the infamous killer clown. Now let's jump straight into his childhood. John Wayne Gacy was born on March 17, 1942, Chicago, Illinois. He grew up with an alcoholic father who would beat the children with a razor strap if they were perceived to have misbehaved. Gacy suffered further alienation at school, unable to play with other children due to congenital heart condition that was looked upon by his father as another failing. He later realized he was attracted to men, which made him question his sexuality.
Now moving on to his adult life. When Gacy turned 18, he decided that he wanted to get involved in politics. Gacy worked as an assistant precinct captain for a Democrat Party candidate in his neighborhood, and his father disapproved of Gacy's actions since he was a Republican. In 1962, Gacy went to Las Vegas, Nevada, and found work within the ambulance service before being transferred to working as a monetary attendant. He worked as a monetary attendant for 3 months before returning to Chicago.
While working one day, Gacy clambered into a coffin that had a dead body of a young teenage boy and fondled his corpse. Shocked by his actions, Gacy called his mom, asking him if he could go home. After arriving back to Chicago, Gacy enrolled in a Northwestern business college. Despite never graduating from high school, he graduated in 1963. After college, Gacy took a management trainee position with the Nunn Bush Shoe Company.
In 1964, Gacy was transferred to Springfield, Illinois, to work as a salesman and was eventually promoted to manager of that department, which is how he met his wife, Marilyn Myers, a co-worker in that department. In March 1964, both Macy and Myers got engaged. Gacy joined the JCs, which is a training civic organization that promotes leadership through community service. In April, Gacy was named, quote, key man for the JCs due to all his hard work. This was also when Gacy had experienced his second homosexual experience.
According to Gacy, he was plied with alcohol by one of his colleagues after being invited to spend the evening on his couch. Gacy's colleagues then performed oral sex on Gacy while he was still drunk. In September of 1964, Gacy and Myers got married. In 1965, Gacy was elected vice president of the Springfield JC, which was a decision taken by the organization after Gacy was named the third most astounding man in Illinois. Myers' father, Gacy's father-in-law, brought three Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurants in Waterloo, Iowa. Both Gacy and Myers moved to Waterloo to manage these restaurants in 1966. Gacy's first son was born, and his name was Michael.
Gacy spent his time working 12 to 14-hour shifts for the KFC franchise, working in the JCs, and being a father. Soon, Gacy's parents paid him a visit, and Gacy's father apologized for everything he had done to him and said that he was wrong about Gacy, and then gave him his approval. In 1967, Gacy's wife had given birth to a second child, a girl named Christine. Gacy continued to climb up the rank of the JCs and was then named outstanding vice president of the Waterloo captain of the chapter of the organization.
However, there was a darker side of the Waterloo JCs, and Gacy was one of the people involved. Gacy and other Waterloo JCs were involved in a wife swapping, prostitution, pornography, and drug use. Gacy then opened a club in the basement of his home, where he allowed his KFC employees to drink and play pool. However, these invites seemed only to go out to teenage boy employees. Gacy would gather these boys to get them alone, give them alcohol and drugs, and show them pornography.
Now let's talk about the first sexual assault Gacy committed. In August 1967, Gacy had committed his first sexual assault to a son of a fellow JC, Donald Voorhees, a 15-year-old boy. Voorhees was lured by Gacy to go to his home with the promise that Gacy would show him pornography and would give him alcohol. After getting Voorhees drunk, Gacy pressured the boy to perform oral sex on him. Gacy continued to blackmail the boy and several other boys into more sexual encounters. Gacy was tricking many teenage boys by making them believe that he was commissioned by the government to conduct these homosexual experiments for, quote, scientific research. However, in March 1968, Voorhees told his father about what Gacy was doing to him.
Gacy was then arrested and charged for the sodomy of Voorhees and attempted assault on Edward Lynch, a 16-year-old, who was raped, strangled, and handcuffed. Gacy denied the charges, saying that it was all a political-motivated lie in which he demanded to take a polygraph test. The results of the test showed that Gacy was becoming nervous when answering the questions about the two boys. In May of 1968, Gacy was indicted on charges of sodomy, so Gacy persuaded one of his employers, 18-year-old Russell, to beat Voorhees and prevent him from testifying. Voorhees was able to escape and inform the police about this attack. At first, Sorchid denied any involvement, but then, facing charges, Sorchid confessed and told police that Gacy was the one that ordered him to attack Voorhees.
Charges were then added to the other charges that Gacy was facing. Gacy was examined by two doctors for a physiatric evaluation at the Physiatric Hospital of the University of Iowa, which was ordered by the judge. The doctors observed and interacted with Gacy over a period of 17 days and concluded that Gacy had an antisocial personality disorder and found him mentally competent to stand trial. In November, Gacy pleaded guilty to one count of sodomy in relation to Voorhees, but pleaded not guilty to other charges. Gacy insisted that the sex with Voorhees was consensual. He was not believed, and a jury found him guilty of sodomy on December 1968. Gacy was sentenced to 10 years of imprisonment.
Gacy's wife filed for a divorce and asked for the house, property, and custody of both children. Meyer sold the house and moved away from Waterloo, and Gacy never saw his children again. During his time in prison, Gacy was known as a model prisoner at the Anamosa State Penitentiary because he rose to head cook in the kitchen, joined the JC chapter, and grew its membership. In 1969, Gacy was denied parole, so in order to prepare for his second one in 1970, Gacy completed 16 high school courses and received his high school diploma. Gacy's father died while Gacy was in prison, and his request to attend the funeral was denied. After serving 18 months of his sentence, Gacy granted a parole with the conditions that he lived with his mother and was given a 10 p.m. curfew and received 12 months of probation.
In February 1971, Gacy started working as a cook, and a teenage boy claimed that Gacy lured him into his car at a bus station by telling him he would drive him home. Gacy then tried to force him into sex. However, this complaint was dismissed by the court when the boy failed to appear in court. The Iowa Parole Board never found out about this complaint, and when Gacy's probation ended 8 months later, his records of sexual assault were sealed.
Now on to Gacy's new beginning. Gacy's mother bought a house at West Avenue in North Park Township, which Gacy moved into. In 1971, Gacy got engaged to Carol Hoff, a woman who was divorced and already had two daughters. Hoff then moved into Gacy's home, and Gacy's mother moved out just before the couple were about to get married. 1 week before the wedding, Gacy was arrested and charged with aggravated battery and reckless conduct. This happened because a complaint filed by another teenage boy who told the police that Gacy pretended to be a police officer and had flashed him his sheriff badge at the boy to lure him into his car in order to perform oral sex on him. The complaint tried to blackmail Gacy, and when the prosecutor found out, the case was dismissed, leaving Gacy free. Once Gacy quit his job as a cook, he began a construction company, PDM Contractors. Gacy and a young male employee traveled to Florida to check out a property that Gacy bought. The boy then said Gacy raped him on the first night they got there.
Once they were back in Chicago, the boy went to Gacy's house and beat him. The boy left. Gacy explained that he was attacked because the boy was a dissatisfied employee. Around his neighborhood, Gacy was considered helpful to many people. Gacy continued to be interested in politics, and he was active in a Democratic Party. Gacy's efforts earned him an appointment to the Norwood Park Township Street Lighting Committee, and he earned the title of precinct captain. In 1975, Gacy was appointed as director of Chicago's annual Polish Constitutional Day Parade. The parade raised Gacy to new heights, and he was granted special security clearance by the street service and was then allowed to meet with the First Lady, Rosalynn Carter.
And now on to how he got the nickname Killer Clown. Active with the local moose club, Gacy was introduced to the Jelly Joker Clown Club. The members of the club were to attend fundraising events, parades, and often volunteer to entertain hospitalized children. Gacy joined the ranks in 1975 and performed as Pogo the Clown and Patches the Clown. Gacy came out to his wife as bisexual. In 1976, the couple agreed to divorce. Gacy's wife would see Gacy in the garage with the teenage boys and found gay porn in the house. The killer clown would lure his victims with the promise of construction work or some other ruse. Then he would capture, sexually assault, torture, and eventually strangle most of them with his hands or with a rope.
Now let's move on to Gacy's victims. Disclaimer, none of these victims are in order. Timothy Jack McCoy, 16 years old, was stabbed to death by Gacy on January 3rd, 1972. He was on his way home while he stopped at a layover at a bus station. He was Gacy's first known victim. McCoy was identified by his teeth in May 1986.
Victim number 28 was between the ages of 14 and 18, unidentified, white male, 5'6 to 5'11, went missing on January 3rd, 1972 through July 1975.
John Boots Cotchy was 18 years old, left home on July 31st, 1975. He dropped out of school and quit working for a contractor after 8 months. He was on his way to get his final paycheck at 8213 W Summerdale Avenue. His body was the first one to be found by police.
Victim number 5, from 22 to 32 years old, unidentified, while male, 5 feet 7 to 5 feet 11, went missing January 20th, 1976 to March 15, 1977.
Joe Samson was 19 years old. April 6, 1977, he disappeared. His body was found in Gacy's crawl space and identified November 1979 through March 1980.
Samuel Stapleton was 14 years old, one of Gacy's youngest victims. He disappeared during a walk home from his sister's residence in Chicago on May 13, 1976. His bracelet was found in Gacy's crawl space and was confirmed on November 14 that he passed away. Victim number 26, 22 through 30 years old. He was unidentified as a white male, 5 feet 2 through 5 feet 6. He disappeared between June 13, 1976 and August 6, 1976.
Jimmy Hackinson was 16 years old. His last contact with his mother in August 1976, DNA supplied by a brother and sister confirmed a body found almost 40 years prior in Gacy's crawl space belonging to him.
Victim number 13, 17 to 21 years old, unidentified white male between 5'11 to 6'2 went missing from August 6, 1976 to October 5, 1976.
Victim number 21 was 21 to 27 years old. He was an unidentified white male, 5'8 to 6 feet, disappeared between August 6, 1976 through October 25, 1976.
Rick Johnson, 17 years old. He was dropped off to a concert on August 6, 1976, and on January 1, 1979, he was confirmed dead through dental work.
William George Bundy, 19 years old. He said he was going to a party in October 1976. He went missing for 35 years. DNA provided by his siblings showed that Bundy is an unidentified Gacy victim. It's suspected Bundy worked for Gacy.
Michael Marino, 14 years old. Marino and longtime friend Kenneth Parker, 16, are last seen October 24, 1976. He was identified March 29, 1980. Years later, she claims that the remains she buried were not those of her son.
Kenneth Parker was 16 years old. Parker and longtime friend Michael Marino, 14, were last seen on October 24, 1976. X-rays of an arm Parker had previously broken were used to identify him on March 29, 1980. His body was examined in 2016 for DNA testing at the request of Marino's mother, who claims her son is not a Gacy victim.
Gregory Godzik, 17 years old, went missing on December 11, 1976. Godzik's body was found in the crawl space and identified through dental records on January 1979. Gacy claims during his trial that Godzik dug his own grave.
John Zick, 19 years old. Zick disappeared January 20th, 1977. On December 15, 1978, police found a Main West High School ring in Gacy's home that belonged to Zick. A body found in Gacy's crawl space is identified through dental records as Saint in January 1979.
John Prestige, 20 years old, he's last seen alive March 15, 1977. Dental records provided by his mother confirm in January 1979 that a body found in the crawl space of Gacy's home is Prestige.
Victim number 10, 17 to 21 years old. This unidentified white male, 5'7 to 5'11, disappeared between March 15, 1977 and July 5, 1977.
Matthew Boehm, 18 years old, reported missing on July 5, 1977. A body found in Gacy's crawl space is confirmed to be Bowman on January 27th, 1979.
Robert Gilroy, 18 years old. Gilroy told his parents he's going to a horseback riding lesson September 15, 1977. He was not reported missing until September 27th, 1977. The Gilroy family lives four blocks from Gacy's home, but there was no connection. A body found in Gacy's crawl space is confirmed with dental records to be Gilroy's on January 6, 1979.
John Mallory, 19 years old. The night of September 25, 1977 was the last time he was seen alive. His sister Judith was murdered 6 years prior. A body found in Gacy's crawl space is confirmed with dental records to be Maori on January
27, 1979. Russell Nelson, 22 years old. Gacy's first victim from outside the Chicago area caused his mother to wish her happy birthday on October 17, 1977. However, that was the last time he was heard of. Nelson is identified on January 6, 1979 through dental records.
Robert Winch, 18 years old. He was last seen alive November 11, 1977. A distinctive tiger eye belt buckle found inside Gacy's house was linked to Winch, but he was identified September 12, 1979 by a marking on bones that had been broken in an accident and then healed.
Tommy Bowling, 20 years old. Tommy disappeared November 18, 1977 from his Chicago home. His wedding ring and dental records confirmed on September 12, 1979 that a body found in Gacy's crawl space is belonging.
David Talisman, 20 years old, disappeared on December 9, 1977. His body is recovered from Gacy's crawl space. November 16, 1979, was identified with an x-ray of his arms.
William Kindred, 19 years old. He was reported missing after he failed to arrive at his house on February 16, 1978. His body was found in Gacy's crawl space and he was identified and confirmed with dental records May 21, 1979.
Timothy O'Rourke, 20 years old. O'Rourke disappeared January 30th, 1978. Friends said he frequently visited gay bars, which Gacy was known to also prowl. His body recovered June 30th, 1978.
Frank Landigan, 19 years old, went missing on November 4th, 1978. Police linked his death to Gacy on December 26th, 1978 after they discovered some of his personal items inside Gacy's house. His body was found November 12, 1978.
James Massara, 20 years old, the Elmwood Park resident, disappears November 23, 1978. His body was found in the Des Plaines River, Canahan, on December 28, 1978. He is identified through his fingerprints.
Robert Peast, 15 years old. On December 11th, 1978, he disappeared. Gacy is arrested December 21st, 1978, and Peast is believed to be the last fit of his victims. Peast's body is recovered and positively identified April 9th, 1979.
Now on to John Wayne Gacy's trial. During the investigation on the victims of the Killer Clown, the authorities would find no evidence, and it was not until the disappearance of 15-year-old Robert Peace in December 1978 that they got their first big break. Gacy agreed to meet investigators to discuss Peace's disappearance, but he did not show up until 3 a.m., and he was wearing clothes covered in dirt. He proceeded to explain that his car got stuck in the mud near his home. He claimed that he never met or spoken with Peace. When they drove by his home the next day, they found no evidence of his vehicle being trapped. They discovered that Gacy had sodomy conviction in Iowa a few years later and was sent to prison for having sexual relationships with a juvenile boy. Therefore, they put him on police surveillance. One time, Gacy saw the policeman watching through the front of his house and asked them if they needed the bathroom. And that's when authorities drafted a search warrant for the house and they found a total of 29 bodies. While analyzing the remains of the evidence, they found a familiar mark. It was fabricated stuff down the victim's throat in forms of underwear, socks, rags, t-shirts, etc. On December 21st, 1978, 36-year-old Gacy was arrested and ultimately charged with 33 counts of murder. Gacy was found guilty on all counts, and 12 of the verdicts qualified for the death penalty. On May 9, 1994, he was executed by lethal injection. Thank you for coming, and we were your hosts, Vianney,
Mia,
Elena,
and Rocio.
Please come again next time.